The snow that had fallen during the night covered the narrow path leading from Yuvarovka to the school, and its course could be surmised only by the faint broken shadow on the glistening carpet of snow. The teacher trod cautiously in her small fur-trimmed boots, ready to withdraw her foot if the snow proved treacherous. It was only a half-kilometre to the school, and the teacher had merely thrown a short fur jacket over her shoulders and tied a light woollen kerchief on her head. It was bitter cold, and there was a fierce wind besides, which swept the freshly fallen snow off the frozen snow crust and showered her with it from head to foot. But the 24-year-old teacher liked all that. She liked it when the frost bit her nose and cheeks, when the wind blew under her fur jacket and stung her body with the cold. Turning her back to the wind, she saw behind her the thick footprints of her pointed shoes, like the tracks of some wild animal, and that, too, appealed to her. The fresh January morning, saturated with light, awakened in her joyful thoughts about life and about herself. It was only 2 years since she'd come from college, and already she'd acquired the reputation of a competent, experienced teacher of Russian. They knew and appreciated her everywhere, in Yuvarovka, Kuzminsky, Black Gully, the Pete Settlement, and the Stud Farm, and they respectfully called her Anna Vasilyevna. A man was coming across the field in her direction. "What if he won't step aside to let me by?" thought Anna Vasilyevna, with lively apprehension. "Two people can't fit onto the path, and if you step aside, you sink into the snow in a second." But she knew inwardly that there wasn't a person in the district who wouldn't step aside for the teacher from Yuvarovka. They drew level. It was Frolov, a warden at the stud farm.
"Good morning, Anna Vasilyevna."
Frolov raised his fur hat above his solid, close-cropped head.
"What are you doing? Put it back on, it's freezing."
Frolov probably wanted to pull his fur hat over his eyes himself, but now he delayed on purpose, wanting to show that the cold didn't affect him at all. A sheepskin coat fitted his trim, light body snugly, and in his hand he held a slender, snake-like whip with which he kept hitting his white felt boots, which were turned down below the knee.
"How's my Lyosha? He's not acting up?" Frolov asked deferentially.
"Of course he is. All normal children act up, just so it doesn't go too far," replied Anna Vasilyevna, conscious of her pedagogical experience. Frolov grinned.
"My Lyoshka's quiet. He takes after his father."
He stepped aside, and, sinking up to his knees in the snow, he looked no taller than a fifth grader. Anna Vasilyevna nodded condescendingly to him and went on her way. The two-story building, with its wide windows painted with frost, stood behind a low fence right beside the highway. Its red walls cast a reddish light on the snow all the way up to the highway. The school had been built on the road on the side away from Yuvarovka because it was attended by children from all around, from the nearby villages, from the stud farm, from the oil workers' sanatorium, and from the distant Pete settlement. And now, along the highway from both directions, hoods, kerchiefs, caps, earmuffs, and bashliks streamed towards the school gates.
"Good morning, Anna Vasilyevna!"
shouted every second, some of the greetings ringing and clear, others muffled and barely audible beneath the scarves and kerchiefs bundled up to the eyes. Anna Vasilyevna's first lesson was with the fifth-grade A group. The shrill bell signalling the beginning of classes hadn't ceased ringing when Anna Vasilyevna entered the classroom. The children rose together, greeted her, and sat down in their seats. It took a while for it to get quiet. Desktops banged, benches creaked, someone sighed loudly, evidently bidding farewell to the carefree morning mood. "Today we'll finish analysing parts of speech." The class grew quiet, and one could hear a heavy truck crawling and skidding along the highway. Anna Vasilyevna remembered how nervous she used to get the previous year before classes began, and she used to repeat to herself, like a schoolgirl during an exam, "A noun is a part of speech. A noun is a part of speech." And also she remembered how strange a fear had tormented her. What if they won't understand? Anna Vasilyevna smiled at the recollection, adjusted the pin in her heavy knot of hair, and in a calm, even voice, feeling her calmness like a warmth through her body, began,
A noun is a part of speech that denotes an object. In grammar, an object is the name for anything about which one can ask who or what it is. For example, who is he? A student. Or what is it? A book. Can I come in? In the half-open doorway stood a small figure in worn felt boots on which sparkles of melting frost were dissolving. His round face, stung by the bitter cold, glowed as though rubbed with beets, and his eyebrows were silvered with frost. "Late again, Savushkin?" Like the majority of young teachers, Anna Vasilyevna liked to be strict, but right now her question sounded almost plaintive. Interpreting the teacher's words as permission to enter the classroom, Savushkin quickly stole to his seat. Anna Vasilyevna saw the boy put his oilskin bag in the desk and ask his neighbour something without turning his head, probably what she was explaining. Savushkin's lateness grieved Anna Vasilyevna as an annoying little incident that ruined a day which had begun well. The geography teacher, a small, dried-up old lady who resembled a night moth, had complained to her that Savushkin kept coming in late. She complained a lot, in general, about the noise in the classroom, the students' inattentiveness. "The first morning lessons are so difficult," the old woman had sighed. Yes, for those who can't hold their students' attention and make their lessons interesting, Anna Vasilyevna had thought then with self-assurance and had offered to change hours with her. Now she felt guilty before the old woman who was perceptive enough to have sensed a challenge and a reproach in Anna Vasilyevna's obliging offer. "Is everything clear?" Anna Vasilyevna addressed the class. "Yes, yes," the children chorused in response. "Fine, then give me examples." It was quiet for a very few seconds. Then someone said hesitantly, "Cat?" "Right," said Anna Vasilyevna, instantly recalling that the year before, the first example had also been cat. And then all bonds seemed to break loose. "Window, table, house, road." "Right," said Anna Vasilyevna. The class seethed with happy excitement. Anna Vasilyevna was surprised at the joy with which the children named objects that were familiar to them, as though they perceived a new, unusual significance in them. The range of examples kept expanding. But during the first moments, the children stuck to the most familiar, tangible things. Wheel, tractor, well, starling's nest. But from a desk in the back, where fat Vasyavka was sitting, there came the thin but insistent sound of tack, tack, tack. And someone said tentatively, "Town." "Town, good," Anna Vasilyevna approved. And then they were off. "Street, subway, tram, film." "That'll do," said Anna Vasilyevna. "I can see you understand it." The voices died down, somehow reluctantly. Only fat Vasyadka still kept droning on his unacknowledged tack. And suddenly, as if roused from sleep, Savushkin rose from his desk and cried out clearly, "Winter rock!" The children burst out laughing. "Quiet!" Anna Vasilyevna slapped her palm on the desk. "Winter rook," Savushkin repeated, without noticing either his classmates' laughter or the teacher's peremptory shout. He said it differently from the other students. The words burst from his heart, like a confession, like a joyful mystery, which his brimming heart hadn't the strength to hold back. Anna Vasilyevna couldn't understand his strange excitement, and hiding her irritation with difficulty, she said, "Why, winter? Simply oak." "What's an oak? A winter oak. Now, that's a real noun." "Sit down, Savushkin. That's what lateness does. Oak is a noun, but we haven't yet studied what winter is. Be so good as to come to the teacher's room during the main break." "So much for your winter oak," tittered someone at the back desk. Savushkin sat down, smiling at his own thought, totally unaffected by the teacher's threat. "A difficult boy," thought Anna Vasilyevna. The lesson continued. "Sit down," said Anna Vasilyevna, when Savushkin entered the teacher's room. The boy sank into the soft armchair with pleasure and rocked several times on its springs. "Be so good as to explain why you invariably come late to school." "I really don't know, Anna Vasilyevna." He spread his hands in an adult gesture. "I leave a whole hour before school starts."
How difficult it was to arrive at the truth in the simplest matter. Many of the children lived much farther away than Savushkin, and yet none of them spent more than an hour getting there. You live in Kuzminsky?
No, at the sanatorium.
And you're not ashamed to say that you live an hour before class? It's a 15-minute walk from the sanatorium to the highway, and it doesn't take more than half an hour to get here from the highway.
But I don't use the highway. I take a shortcut through the forest, said Savushkin,
although he himself was quite surprised at the fact.
Through, not thrun,
Anna Vasilyevna corrected him mechanically. She suddenly felt upset and sad, as she always did when she came up against a child's lies. She remained silent, hoping that Savushkin would say,
I'm sorry, Anna Vasilyevna, I got carried away playing snowballs with the other kids,
or something just as simple and ingenuous, but he only regarded her with his big grey eyes as if to say,
So we've cleared it all up. What else do you want from me?
It's sad, Savushkin. Very sad. I'll have to talk with your parents.
There's only my mother, Anna Vasilyevna, Savushkin smiled.
Anna Vasilyevna blushed slightly. She remembered Savushkin's mother, a shower nurse, as her son called her. She worked at the sanatorium hydrotherapy session, a thin, timid-looking woman with hands that were white and flaccid, as though made of cloth because of the hot water. She was alone. Her husband had been killed during World War II, and she fed and brought up three other children besides Kolya. Savushkina undoubtedly had enough worries without this business.
"Do come, Anna Vasilyevna. She'll be glad to see you."
Unfortunately, nothing of what I have to say will make her glad. Does she have the morning shift?
No, the second starting at 3.
Very well, then. I finish at 2. You'll take me there after class. The path along which Savushkin led Anna Vasilyevna started right at the back of the school grounds. As soon as they entered the forest and the heavily snow-laden fir branches closed behind them, they were transported into another enchanted world of peace and quiet. The magpies and crows flying from tree to tree shook the branches, knocked off the cones, and from time to time broke off the bristle dry twigs that they caught with their wings. But nothing made any sound. It was totally white all around. Only high up, the crowns of the tall, weeping birches tossed by the wind stood out, and the slender branches seemed drawn in Indian ink on the blue mirror-like surface of the sky. The path ran alongside a stream, now on a level with it, obediently following all the windings of its course, now climbing up high to wind along the sheer steep slope. Occasionally, the trees would part to expose sunlit cheery clearings, crisscrossed with hare's tracks that resembled a watch chain. There were larger tracks, too, in the form of a shamrock, which belonged to some large animal. The tracks led into the innermost depths of the forest, to the wind-fallen wood.
"An elk's been through here," said Savushkin,
as though he was speaking of a good acquaintance when he saw Anna Vasilyevna's interest in the tracks.
"Don't be frightened," he added
in response to the glance the teacher cast at the dense forest.
"Elks are peaceful."
"You've seen one?" Anna Vasilyevna asked excitedly.
"An elk? A real live one?"
Savushkin sighed.
"No, I never had the chance to. I've seen his little pellets."
"What?"
"Droppings,"
Savushkin explained shyly. Gliding under the arch of a bowed willow, the path ran down to the stream again. In places, the stream was covered by a thick blanket of snow. In others, it was trapped in a sheer armour of ice, and occasionally, amid the ice and snow, free-flowing water peeped out with dark eyes. "Why isn't it completely frozen?" asked Anna Vasilyevna.
"There are warm springs gushing in it. Look, can you see them spurting?"
Bending over the unfrozen patch of water, Anna Vasilyevna made out a thin thread extending from the bottom. It burst into tiny bubbles without reaching the water's surface. The very slender stem, with its small bubbles, resembled a lily of the valley.
"There are simply tons of these springs here," said Savushkin enthusiastically. "That's why the stream runs even under the snow."
He brushed the snow aside, and some pitch-black but transparent water became visible. Anna Vasilyevna noticed that the snow that fell in the water didn't melt, but thickened instantly and sagged in the water like gelatinous, greenish algae. She liked that so much that she started knocking snow into the water with the toe of her boot, feeling happy when especially intricate shapes formed from the large lump of snow.
She'd begun enjoying herself and didn't immediately notice that Savushkin had gone on and was waiting for her. He'd sat down high in the fork of a branch that hung over the stream. Anna Vasilyevna caught up with Savushkin. At that point, the activity of the warm springs ended. The stream was covered with a thin film of ice. Swift, light shadows rushed about along its marbled surface.
Look how thin the ice is. You can even see the current.
What do you mean, Anna Vasilyevna? I rushed the branch. That's the shadow moving.
Anna Vasilyevna held her tongue. Perhaps here in the forest she'd do well to keep quiet. Savushkin set off again, walking in front of the teacher, bending slightly and gazing about him concentratedly. And the forest led them on and on with its complicated, tangled paths. There seemed no end to the trees. Snowdrifts, silence, and twilight shot through with sunshine. In the distance, a smoky blue chink appeared unexpectedly. The trees thinned out, and it became open and fresh. And then the chink turned into a wide, clear space, which appeared in front of them, flooded with sunlight. Something glittered, sparkled, and warmed with icy stars. The path skirted a nut bush, and the forest immediately opened up in all directions. In the midst of the clearing, in white, glistening garments, stood an oak, as enormous and magnificent as a cathedral. The trees seemed to part respectively to allow their older companion to spread out in full force. Its lower branches stretched out in a tent over the clearing. The snow had filled the deep crevices of the bark, and the trunk, which was so wide that it would have taken three men to get their arms around it, looked as if it were shot through with silver thread. It had hardly shed any of the foliage which had dried up during the fall. The oak was covered with snow-capped leaves to the very top.
"There it is, the winter oak!"
Anna Vasilyevna stepped timidly towards the oak, and the mighty, magnanimous forest sentinel quietly shook a branch to her in greeting. Totally unaware of what was passing in his teacher's heart, Savushkin was messing about at the foot of the oak, treating the oak simply as his old acquaintance.
"Look, Anna Vasilyevna!"
With an effort, he pushed aside a lump of snow, whose underside was plastered with earth and the remains of rotting grass. There in the hole lay a little ball, wrapped in rotting leaves as thin as a cobweb. Sharp points of needles protruded through the leaves, and Anna Vasilyevna guessed that it was a hedgehog. "He's wrapped himself up well." Savushkin carefully covered the hedgehog with its modest blanket. Then he dug up the snow at another root. A tiny grotto with a fringe of icicles on its opening was revealed. A brown frog was sitting in it, as if it were made of cardboard. Its skin, tightly stretched along its bones, looked as though it were lacquered. Savushkin touched the frog, but it didn't stir.
"It's pretending it's dead," Savushkin laughed. But just let the sun warm it up a bit, and boy, will it jump."
He continued guiding Anna Vasilyevna through his world. There were many other guests who'd taken shelter at the foot of the oak. Bugs, lizards, insects. Some were hiding under the roots. Others had burrowed in the cracks of the bark, grown thin, as though they were hollow. They were hibernating through the winter. The powerful tree, brimming with life, had gathered around itself so much vital warmth that the poor creatures couldn't have found themselves a better dwelling. Anna Vasilyevna was staring with joyous interest at the secret life of the forest, so unfamiliar to her when she heard Savushkin's anxious exclamation,
"Oh, we'll be too late to catch Mother!"
Anna Vasilyevna quickly lifted her hand to look at her watch. It was 3:15. She felt as though she were caught in a trap. And mentally begging the oak forgiveness for her petty human deceit, she said, "Well, Savushkin, that only shows that a shortcut isn't necessarily the best way. You'll start having to take the highway." Savushkin didn't answer, merely lowering his head. "My God," Anna Vasilyevna thought painfully, "what clearer way of admitting my impotence." She remembered that day's class and all her other classes. How poor, dry and cold were her comments on the world, on language, on those things without which man, helpless in his feelings, is mute before the world, on their beautiful language, which is as fresh, beautiful and rich as life was bounteous and beautiful. And she considered herself a competent teacher. She'd taken no more than one stride, perhaps, along the path for which a whole lifetime isn't sufficient. And where was it, this path? To find it wasn't simple or easy, like finding the key to a miser's casket.
but in the joy with which the children had yelled out, "Tractor! Well! And Starling's Nest!" a joy she now understood. The first landmark was dimly visible to her. "Thank you for the walk, Savushkin. Of course, you can take this route too."
"Thank you, Anna Vasilevna."
Savushkin blushed. He badly wanted to tell the teacher that he'd never be late again, but he was afraid of lying. He raised the collar of his jacket and pulled the cap with the ear flaps lower over his eyes.
I'll walk you.
"There's no need, Savushkin. I'll make it by myself." He glanced doubtfully at the teacher, then picked up a stick from the ground and, breaking off its bent end, held it out to Anna Vasilyevna.
"If an elk jumps out, let him have it across the back and he'll run for all he's worth. Better still, simply wave the stick and that'll be enough for him, or else he'll get offended and leave the forest for good."
"All right, Savushkin, I won't hit him." After she'd gone a short distance, Anna Vasilyevna, for the last time, glanced around at the oak, lightly pink in the rays of the sunset, and saw a small, dark figure at the foot of it. Savushkin hadn't left. He was watching over his teacher from a distance, and suddenly Anna Vasilyevna realized that the most wonderful thing in the forest wasn't the winter oak, but the small person in the worn felt boots and the patched cheap clothes, the son of a shower nurse and a soldier who'd perished for his country, a marvelous and mysterious citizen of the future. She waved her hand to him and quietly made her way along the winding path. That was The Winter Oak.